What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk for another Canucks playoff game day here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd. My co-host, Thomas Drance, will be along a little bit later on the show at noon as he covers this game for the Canucks in Edmonton. So we'll join up with Drancer in about an hour's time. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your thoughts in now. And by the way, of course, this one in Edmonton, game four tonight, the Canucks with a chance to take a commanding 3-1 series lead in this second round matchup with the Oilers. We will be giving away, I'll try to do it at the end of this segment, two four-packs of tickets, right? So two packs of four tickets to the Rogers Arena viewing party for this one. If you've seen them on the broadcast, if you've been, you know what great events those are. They're in high demand. So we've got four packs of tickets to give away to the viewing party at Rogers Arena for tonight's game, 6:30 start time. So we'll do a trivia question at the end of this segment. You can text in for your chance to win one of those four packs of tickets to the viewing party tonight. All right. So really fascinating game day storylines developing in this one already between the Canucks and the Oilers. And we've seen how the Oilers rolled things out at practice. We've heard from their players, their coach. We saw the Canucks had a basically optional with a bunch of players there, but didn't really show us anything in terms of lineup at their skate. Now we're starting to hear from their players and coaches. And one thing is that's developing and really standing out to me is there is a very striking contrast in the mentality and how these two teams are operating right now. The Canucks are up in the series, obviously, but even more than that, they have the Oilers on the back foot. I would say on the back foot from a coaching perspective, the Oilers are very reactive right now. And so part of this starts with, of course, one of the big storylines tonight, which is that Calvin Pickard will be in net for the Edmonton Oilers. We all know how poorly Stuart Skinner has fared through the first three games of this series. He was pulled for the third period of game three. Calvin Pickard went in, only faced three shots. No Stuart Skinner. The Edmonton Oilers deciding to go with the guy who started their season as their third string goalie, AHL goalie, eventually came up and was the backup, did pretty well, backing up Stuart Skinner in the NHL. But Calvin Pickard will make his first career NHL playoff start tonight against the Vancouver Canucks. Now, again, look, I get it. He was their backup, and he did well for them this year. But you look at his track record in his career in the, like, six previous seasons, this was not an NHL regular goalie. This was an organizational kind of third goalie type of guy, AHL, you know, spot starts here and there in the NHL, but mostly in the AHL. That's really been the story of his career for the last six seasons before this one, where he ended up being the backup again because Jack Campbell flamed out. So as much as you can say, well, hey, you know, it's two third-string goalies and two guys who started the year in the AHL, Calvin Pickard's in a very, very different situation. Very different situation than Artur Shelov's. It's goaltending. It's a small sample. Lots of different things can happen. But make no mistake, this is not a good place for the Edmonton Oilers to be in. To be turning to their third-string goalie four games into this series now, because they have completely lost confidence in Stuart Skinner. And that's what this is, right? I don't think this is about, oh, we're getting a reset for Stuart Skinner. I think they are deeply concerned about what they were seeing from Stuart Skinner in terms of the goals he was letting in, but also in terms of his emotional performance. We've talked about it on this show. Skinner's supposed to be unflappable, right? Well, I don't think they thought he was unflappable. He admitted himself that he let the emotion get the best of him after game three. I know Elliot Friedman was on the Jeff Merrick show today talking about, you know, the Oilers a little bit concerned with how Skinner was reacting to some of these goals. So we know the Oilers have lost confidence to a degree anyways in their starting goalie. And that's the decision to start Pickard tells you all you need to know in that regard. And that, again, is an example of the Oilers being reactionary, being on the back foot. looking for answers here, desperately trying to find answers. And I think it puts the Canucks in a really strong position going into this game. You know that the Oilers do not have, and whether we're talking about the coaching staff, and it's got to extend to the players as well, they don't have the full confidence in their goaltending situation. So what happens if Calvin Pickard lets in an early one? If maybe Calvin Pickard lets in not so great a goal, a Stuart Skinner-esque goal perhaps in the first period, a goal against the run of play after the Oilers have been pressuring, after Archer Shelov's has made a bunch of good saves, and the Canucks go and get the other one, go the other way and get one past Calvin Pickard. The Oilers have set themselves up now in a situation where if Pickard isn't really, really good, their confidence is going to flag even more than it already has. And this is an opportunity for the Canucks, I think, to turn the screws a little bit, to keep building that psychological edge that they've already established on the Edmonton Oilers. If you beat Pickard early, I think you're going to see some very, very dispirited reactions from the Edmonton Oilers, right? Hey, we made the big decision to go to Pickard, and even he is not getting us saves now. So I think that's one example where if this doesn't work out, there's going to be plenty of very, very fair questions to ask about Chris Knobloch's decision. And look, I get it. It's hard to keep rolling Stuart Skinner out there, but you've basically admitted you've lost faith in him now. If Pickard doesn't work out, I don't know how you go back to Skinner. You're making an awful big bet on Calvin Pickard, again, who's basically been an AHL journeyman goalie, or at least an NHL journeyman goalie for the last six seasons before this one. You're making an awful big bet on him coming through to turn this series around for you. But it's more than just the goaltending decision that really illustrates the contrast between how these teams are operating, that illustrates how the Oilers are on the back foot and how the Canucks are composed, calm, confident. Chris Knobloch earlier today talking about, you know, potentially playing 11 forwards, 7 defensemen. This is per our own Brendan Batchelor, of course, is there covering the series. And part of the reason that Knobloch cited for that was, well, you know what? If you go 11-7, you can double shift McDavid and Draisaitl more easily. Well, wait, didn't we just have the conversation about him playing McDavid and Draisaitl completely unsustainable minutes in Game 3 and not having anything to show for it? And didn't Chris Knobloch admit, yeah, we're not going to be able to keep playing those guys as much as we just did? And now on the morning of Game 4, he's openly talking about, well, I'm looking for ways to double shift them more easily. Between benching his starting goalie, already loading up the minutes to unsustainable levels for McDavid and Draisaitl, now again openly talking about, I got to find ways to get them out more to double shift them. The message from Chris Knobloch to me is pretty clear here. The message from Chris Knobloch is basically, there's one way for the Oilers to win this series, and that's for McDavid and Draisaitl to play out of their minds and completely dominate en route to victory. I don't know how else to interpret what we're seeing, what we're hearing from the Oilers head coach, other than a total reliance on McDavid and Draisaitl. Now look, if you're going to completely bet on two players on your team to carry the load and win a series for you, McDavid and Draisaitl, two pretty good options. So maybe they do it. Maybe Chris Knobloch is right that it's the only option in front of him. But I don't know how you look at this and come to any other conclusion than he doesn't trust his starting goalie. He doesn't trust his depth players. And it's funny because, you know, one of the easy lines of criticism about this Oilers team in recent years has been, they're just a two-player team. They're just McDavid and Draisaitl, a bunch of other guys. It's only McDavid and Draisaitl. They carry them, right? We've all heard that. I'm sure many of you have made that same criticism. And the funny thing is, I actually don't really think that was fair this year, right? You look at Hyman, Nugent Hopkins, Ekholm, Bouchard. Like, there's a lot of other really good players on this team. But now you have Chris Knobloch basically putting up his hand and saying, actually, you know what? I agree. This is a two-player team. We are only McDavid and Draisaitl, and if they don't get it done for us, we're hooped. Again, I'm reading between the lines a little bit here. But that's the pretty loud and clear message that I'm getting from Chris Knobloch. And that's a tough way to be reacting. Already, you're down 2-1. I get it. You're down in the series. You need something to go different. But I think it would be very easy. It would have been very easy for a head coach in Chris Knobloch's position to say, you know what? Hey, we're getting our chances. We're going to get one. We're going to start burying these more often. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. Let's not panic. Instead, He is making a ton of changes. He is pushing a ton of buttons. And he's sending a pretty clear message to his depth players, to the rest of his roster, that I don't trust you guys to get the job done. It's going to be 97. It's going to be 29. And as we saw in game three, Canucks did a pretty good job of keeping those guys to the outside. Yeah, there were some scoring chances. There were some posts, of course. That's a dangerous way to live. For plan B right away for the Oilers to be McDavid and Draisaitl, you guys go figure it out. We don't have any other options. You guys do it. Go play 26 minutes. Find a way to score. That's a dicey, dicey spot to be in already down 2-1 in a series for the Edmonton Oilers. Now, meanwhile, as I'm talking here about the contrast between the how the two teams are operating, on the Canucks side of things, it's pretty much calm as can be, and it's not as if they don't have any adversity to deal with right now, or that they haven't had adversity to deal with throughout the course of the playoffs. And you even go back to game three, you know what? They made a couple changes, right? They brought in Linus Karlsson, they brought in Nils Åman, but even those changes and the way Tocchet used those players, the way he demonstrated trust in them, used them in big spots on the penalty kill in Nils Åman's case, Linus Karlsson out there late in a close game, like even those changes kind of send the opposite message of what the Oilers are doing. It speaks to the trust that the Canucks have in their depth options. Now Carson Soucy's out for a game, but does anyone think the Canucks are shaking in their boots because they have to play Noah Juulsen? This was a guy they relied on throughout the course of the regular season. It's not ideal, but Rick Tocchet all year has preached that next man up mentality, and that's what we're going to see from the Canucks. And again, it's very easy to imagine a world where all of the talk today is about, you know, how will the Canucks respond to losing Soucy for a game? Are they outraged by that decision? And we can talk more about that decision later, of course. Carson Soucy officially suspended by the NHL Department of Player Safety, right? But it would be very easy for that to be the dominant story going into game four. How do they react? Are they going to be rattled? How will Noah Juulsen play? Can the Oilers expose him? Instead, all of the focus is on what Edmonton's doing. Going to Calvin Pickard instead of Stuart Skinner. 11-7 potentially. Could Philip Broberg get in? What do their line combinations look like? How much do they play Draisaitl and McDavid together? All of it is about Edmonton trying to react, trying to find a way to even this series. None of it is about how are the Canucks going to respond. Because the Canucks look confident, composed. The Oilers, they look frantic. They look a little bit desperate right now. Maybe that's a little bit too strong a word, but again, when you have the coach who already admitted that he was playing McDavid and Draisaitl way too much, looking for ways to double shift them more easily, I don't know how you draw any other conclusion. Again, maybe it doesn't matter. McDavid and Draisaitl, very, very good enough, very much good enough to paper over a lot of flaws. But there is no question right now which coaching staff has the upper hand, and it is the Vancouver Canucks. There's no question which fan base should be more, in my mind, which fan base should be more confident in how their coaching staff is going about things. It is clearly, clearly Rick Tocchet and the Vancouver Canucks. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your thoughts in now. Steve from White Rock texts in, I know it's not over, but the Oilers went from completely confident to completely collapsing in less than a week. And I love it. The Canucks are ridiculously mentally strong. That's Steve from White Rock. And again, very crucial. No one's planning the parade, obviously, or even, you know, planning the victory celebration for this series. No one's looking ahead to the conference finals here. I want to make that very, very clear. I'm not saying Edmonton's cooked. I'm not saying they're done in this series. Still a long way to go. Four games left. They're only down one game. They have McDavid and Draisaitl. A lot can happen. But which team would you rather be right now? Not just because they're up 2-1 in the series, but because one team knows what they want to do. One team has a very clear identity that their team has bought into that involves the whole team playing a certain way. And the other team is looking for two players to go be the saviors, right? How often do you hear, hey, we had no passengers tonight? Well, the Edmonton Oilers, they're going to have a lot of passengers. That's basically what Chris Knobloch is saying to the team. You guys are passengers. McDavid and Draisaitl, you got to drive the bus for us. Maybe it gets the job done against the Canucks. Maybe McDavid and Draisaitl go superhuman for four games in this series and find a way to get it done. But that's a tough, tough way to win. It's a tough way to live and survive if you're going to be a Stanley Cup contender in the NHL. 650, 650. This one, Johnny from Kelowna. Give me that Pickard talk. Also, I have a lot of friends in Edmonton. They are in full-blown meltdown mode. This one as well. For a team that was supposed to dominate the Canucks, it should sound, it sounds like they are getting dominated with no answers. And that's the thing, again. Look, the Canucks, full value for their two wins. But it's not as if the Oilers have been lost on the ice outside of Stuart Skinner. They've played pretty well for long stretches. The Canucks have done a lot of things well, too. I don't want to discount what the Canucks have done, obviously. But that's what makes it a little surprising to me. That Chris Knobloch so early is going to basically panic mode here. Or at least back against the wall mode. Pushing all of these buttons when you could make a pretty easy case. Like, hey, guys, just stick with what we're doing. We'll be fine. Very surprising to me that they have, just by virtue of being down 2-1, just by virtue of their goalie letting in some bad goals, seem to be this rattled, seem to be this off their game right now. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text one. This one from Sea Legs. We should probably be up 3-0. Going to need a huge effort tonight. We can beat them. Go, Canucks, go. Look, this series, I mean, a bunch of really close games. You can look at it and say the only loss was in overtime. That's true. Obviously, they needed that incredible comeback in game one. The Oilers really stopped playing in that one. I think you can make a compelling case that this series could be any combination of games, right? It could be 3-0 for the Canucks. It could be 3-0 for the Oilers. It could be 2-1 either way. That's how close this series has been. That's how close these games have been. And yes, the Oilers are only one win away from tying up this series and, you know, sending the Canucks back to Vancouver for game five in a tie series, 2-2, and everything to play for. That's why I think tonight is going to be a really, really big one. A really, really big one. You don't want to give Edmonton any belief, right? As I said, they seem like a rattled group right now. Chris Knobloch openly looking for answers, not satisfied with what he's getting from his team at all. They're putting in their third string goalie. If they get the win tonight, it gives them all a chance to breathe, to reset, to refocus, to finally get some of that belief back that they, I think they've lost to this point in the series. On the other hand, the Canucks go up 3-1. We all know how daunting a task that is to come back from. And I think, again, with the way the Canucks, or with the way the Oilers are flailing a little bit here, I should say, I think it's going to be even more difficult for them to come back from a 3-1 series deficit in this one. This one, 650, 650, Al from Nelson says, Jamie, your homerism is duly noted and very much admired from diehards like myself. Still, you have to keep your bias in check. Reading between the lines like that and exaggerating how one-dimensional this team is could be a huge oversight. I agree. Like, again, I don't think the Oilers have to be one-dimensional. They have other good players. I would fully admit that I think the other two-player team line is really overstating things. Evan Bouchard's really good. Matthias Ekholm is a stud. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is really good. Zach Hyman, even down the lineup, like Ryan McLeod for his role, not a bad player. I like Brett Kulak. They have other good players. That's why it's surprising to me that you're only down 2-1. You've got a game at home with the chance to tie it up, and it seems like they are putting all of their eggs in the McDavid and Draisaitl basket. I agree. I'm not saying that should be what they're doing or that's their only option. It just seems like Chris Knobloch disagrees with me and that he thinks it is their only option. And that's why I'm so surprised by Knobloch's decision to operate like this. He also says those two guys alone can tear us apart. I agree with that. I completely agree with that. And he goes on to say, Al from Nelson, we're leading the series because of our depth and some really timely goals while being grossly outshot. It's ours for the taking, but let's keep our heads on straight. And again, I want to stress, I'm not saying this is over. I'm not saying Edmonton can't come back. They absolutely can. I just think their coaching staff has maybe lost the plot a little bit in how they're going about setting their team up to have success for the rest of this series. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. West End Mike says, when Edmonton's game plan is to draw penalties and go to the power play, I wouldn't be surprised to see them working on their diving and head snapping in practice. That's a chirp there from West End Mike. I do think the refereeing is going to be fascinating to watch in this series, right? I don't want to belabor the point about reffing. We had a big discussion about it yesterday, right? We had iMac on, we had Spectre on. So I'm not saying like, oh, who's it going to favor or anything like that, but we all know the temperature has been raised in this series, right? Carson Soucy, yes, he got suspended, but Nikita Zadorov is going to be in the lineup. We know how he has kind of put himself front and center in this series, how much he's drawn the ire of the Oilers. Evander Kane, you know, he cross-checks Connor McDavid in the back during that incident with Carson Soucy. So when the temperature goes up like this, how do the refs respond? Do they let it keep going up? Do they bring out the whistles and call tons of different things to try to bring it down? I think the Canucks just have to keep walking that line. I think they've done a pretty good job of it. Where you're aggressive, where you're physical, where you're not making anything easy for the Oilers, but you're not crossing that line. And if the Oilers get rattled by Zadorov, right? By him cross-checking Connor McDavid late, if they feel like they need to go out and send, make a statement, run around a little bit, I think that should be just fine. Just fine from the Canucks' perspective. They need to focus on their game. If the Oilers are getting distracted by things like that, that is just fine for the Vancouver Canucks. Okay, as mentioned, keep your text coming in, by the way. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As mentioned, we have 2 4 packs of tickets to give away to the watch party at Rogers Arena tonight for Game 4. 6:30 start. They look like awesome events, awesome parties, tons of Canucks fans there. They've been a blast. This is your chance to get a 4-pack of tickets. All right, we're going to do a trivia question again for the watch party tonight for Game 4 at Rogers Arena. So Noah Juulsen expected to draw into the lineup in place of Carson Soucy today for the Vancouver Canucks. So this is a Noah Juulsen themed trivia question. The Canucks acquired Juulsen and Juho Lamico from the Florida Panthers in October 2021. Which player did the Canucks send to Florida in that deal? So again, the Canucks acquired Noah Juulsen and Juho Lamico from the Florida Panthers in October 2021. Which player did the Canucks send to Florida in the deal? Text your answer and your name. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Text your answer and your name to 650, 650 right now for your chance to win one of 2 4 packs of tickets to the away game watch party at Rogers Arena tonight for Game 4. We will announce the winners on the other side here, and we'll also talk to former NHL player, former teammate of Calvin Pickard. So I'm curious to get his reaction about the goalie getting the start tonight. Jason Demers, former NHL player, will join the show next here. Again, Dranser's going to join at noon, so we'll do the whiteboard at noon. We'll, you know, look ahead even more to a big Game 4 coming up between the Vancouver Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers in Edmonton in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You are listening to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd here. Dranser's joining the show at noon today, live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with 3 stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Jason Demers will join us momentarily, but quickly I want to wrap up the trivia question from the previous segment. So with 2 4 packs of tickets to give away to the watch party at Rogers Arena tonight for Game 4, the question was, the Canucks acquired Noah Juulsen and Juho Lamico from the Florida Panthers in October 2021. Which player did the Canucks send to Florida in the deal? The answer, as many of you got, former top pick, Olli Jalevi was the player the Canucks sent. So shout out to Josh from Richmond, who says he's taking his 3 sons to the game tonight. That'll be a blast. And Max from Surrey. And congrats to everyone else for getting the right answer, again, as many of you did. Better luck next time. Hopefully there will be some more watch parties for us to give away tickets to. All right, as mentioned, now joining us on the line here on Canucks Talk, former NHL player, he is Jason Demers. Jason, thanks for doing this today. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jamie. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty well. I mean, I'm enjoying the heck out of this series between the Canucks and the Oilers. So I'm excited for another big game. You know, Canucks with a chance to take a 3-1 lead. I certainly would not count the Oilers out of this series just yet, however. And, you know, one of the big themes in this series so far from Rick Tocchet has been, all right, obviously you have to play really sound defense against McDavid and Draisaitl, but you can't just be content to sit back and kind of be in a shell in your defensive zone. You have to find a way to make plays. You have to find a way to move the puck when you do get it and make them defend a little bit. How hard is it to have that mentality when you're up against some of the best players in the game, right? And you do, you know, finally win that battle in your defensive zone. And instead of off the glass and out, trying to find that play to kind of hold on to the puck and go the other way.
Well, it's definitely difficult, but, you know, I think, listen, the Vancouver Canucks haven't played the prettiest of styles this playoff, but it's working. They've shown they're super resilient and they're able to play in tight games. And they've also really showcased their goalie depth, which I don't think anybody had on their bingo card this playoffs that Artur Shelov is going to put forth the performance that he's put. And I think he's frustrated Edmonton. Now, Edmonton's kind of made some mistakes in terms of loading up that top line and really kind of forgetting about their depth, where I found that Vancouver's really leaned on the four lines that they've kind of built up this season. And, you know, everybody's kind of contributing either defensively or offensively. And you look at last game with Linus Karlsson coming in, and I mean, he comes out and plays a great hockey game. You know, first playoff game, you didn't know what to expect. And, you know, the coaching staff wasn't afraid to implement him on the ice, and he, you know, rewarded him. So I think they're playing a knockdown, gritty style that's frustrating the Oilers a little bit. But at the same time, I feel like they have sat back a little bit too much. And, you know, Edmonton's, you know, obviously people are going to argue that it's only the McDavid-Draisaitl line. But, you know, they're playing him 30 minutes a night, and they're generating a crazy amount of chances. And it's only a matter of time before those start to go in. So I do think they've been content to kind of just keep clearing the puck, and hopefully, you know, the goaltending of Edmonton hasn't been great this series, and they've kind of capitalized on that. And it's kind of been the story all playoffs for Vancouver, is their timely and opportunistic goals. I wouldn't say the majority of the games they've played in the playoffs they've dominated, but they've been the most opportunistic of any team they've played, and they've managed to score timely goals. And chalk that up, in my eyes, to belief within your team that you guys can win no matter what the game is. So, you know, hats off to them. And, you know, I didn't have it being 2-1 Vancouver at this point in the series, so they're proving everybody wrong right now.
Yeah, and you know, your point about the different levels of trust in the depth players from the coaches, I think it's a really good one. I was talking about that off the top of the show, and you know, as you say, like Linus Karlsson comes up, didn't play, like spent almost the whole year in the AHL, first NHL playoff game, and the coach trusts him. He's putting him out there in big moments. He's on the ice against McDavid and Draisaitl for parts of it. And then on the flip side, as you said, you know, you're loading up the McDavid and Draisaitl line. Chris Knobloch is playing them almost 30 minutes in game three. How difficult is that if you're a depth player on Edmonton to kind of feel like, you know, you're almost a sideshow on your own team, right? And it's so much of it is about what McDavid and Draisaitl are doing.
Well, we talked about that on NHL Tonight the last few nights, and it's just not sustainable, you know, especially not just trying to win this series, but win the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah.
If you look at the teams that are left, and the teams that are dominating, you know, examples, Dallas and Florida, I mean, they just rolled four lines heavy, and there's trust up and down the lineup. And with trust, and you get belief, like I said, from guys up and down your roster. And unfortunately, in today's NHL, you got to trust your bottom six guys. They have to come out and produce. Now, it's kind of been the story for the Edmonton Oilers the past few years. It's just, it's so easy to kind of revert to that top line of, you know, putting Leon and Connor together, because they're so dominant and they could play 30 minutes a night like we saw and experience minimal fatigue. But again, that's just not sustainable, because what happens is the bottom six guys is, you know, I know of having played in the NHL and sometimes being or being a part of guys that being one of the guys that got less minutes, I mean, it's a hard thing to do to come on in a playoff game when you kind of feel that the coach doesn't have full trust in you. So then you're gripping the stick, you make a turnover, and then you know that if you make one turnover, it's in the back of your net, and you're probably not going to see the ice the rest of the game. So it's a difficult thing. You have to really be strong-minded and have a again, I keep going back to belief, but it really is one team that really believes and one team that either doesn't have super a huge amount of belief in their bottom six or their goaltending, and you can kind of see it in the way they're playing. So I do think Edmonton's got to go, and I did see the lines. I think they're going to spread out Connor and Leon, and I do think that's a good thing because, listen, if you're going to lose the series, you might as well lose playing four lines, and because if you get through this series and beat Vancouver with Connor and Leon, they're not going to have any gas left to play either Colorado or Dallas. So I just think it's an interesting game tonight. I really do think, you know, they're all must-wins, but this game is extremely pivotal because I do think if Edmonton ties it up and I think they're going to kind of get on a roll, and if they can find some lightning in a bottle with Calvin Pickard. But, you know, this is, if I'm Vancouver, you kind of got them down on one knee. You got to keep them on the ground, because if you let them get up, I think it's going to be it won't be a great thing for them moving forward in the series.
Yeah, it definitely feels like the Canucks are on the front foot. I mean, obviously they're up 2-1, but as you said, just in terms of the lineup moves that the different coaching staffs are making as well, and it's a big opportunity here. And as you mentioned, Calvin Pickard coming in, this will be his first career NHL playoff start. Obviously, he got into the game in Game 3, only faced three shots, I think, in that third period, as it was pretty much one-way traffic in that period. You played with Calvin Pickard in a couple of stops, I believe, but I think most recently with Bakersfield in the AHL. You know, he talked today about, hey, coming in, not putting too much pressure on himself, just playing his game. What can you tell us about Pickard and his mentality as a goaltender?
I mean, he's just done it for so long, and you know, it's his first playoff game, but he's been around a long time and been in a ton of situations. He's watched, he's learned, he's an amazing human being and a great teammate. So, and you know, again, another thing I didn't see on my bingo card is that the goaltending battle tonight would be, you know, Archer Seeloff against Calvin Pickard. I don't think anybody saw that. So, but I feel like that's a testament to guys that, you know, that just battle and work on their game and stay ready. And when opportunity strikes, I think for any kid or young kid in the minors watching this, and just knowing that, listen, you just put your head down and you put in the work and you never know when you're going to get your opportunity and you take advantage of it. So I think Calvin's a strong-minded guy who's going to take advantage of this and run with it. I think they need, at this point, if you look at this series, all they really needed is a serviceable goaltender. And you could argue they could be up 3-0 in this series, just the way Game 1 went and Game 3. So, and for Vancouver, you could argue the same thing.
Yeah.
But I do think Edmonton, you know, their goals above expected, and, you know, diving into the analytics side of it, their goals above expected is crazy how behind they are on it. And they just need a couple big saves, because Edmonton at times have driven play. But, you know, like I said before, the timely goals of the Canucks just kind of put them on their back foot, and they just need somebody in the net that can kind of, they could have confidence in. And as for Calvin, I mean, everybody loves him as a teammate, and guys play hard for him. So I know that group in there is going to play really hard for him in front. The decor is going to be really, really excited to play for him and make sure he looks good back there.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the Shelovs Pickard matchup. The last time that happened, I believe, was last year in the AHL playoffs, when it was the Abbotsford Canucks and the Bakersfield Condors going at it in the Calder Cup playoffs, and it was Shelovs versus Pickard. So, you know, I don't know that a lot of us expected to fast forward a year and you'd be getting that in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But as you said, a testament to the work that both guys have put in. And Pickard was very good as the backup for the Edmonton Oilers this year. And as you mentioned, great teammate, the guys will be motivated. You know, it is interesting because obviously Skinner needs to make more saves. Like, everyone agrees on that. But there were also some pretty significant defensive lapses, I thought, in front of Stuart Skinner in Game 3. You know, Warren Fogle has the giveaway in the defensive zone. Brock Besser kind of gets lost on that set cycle play, and JT Miller finds him. is that an area where you think the Canucks can continue to attack and have success against the Oilers, kind of some of just those lapses that they have sometimes in the defensive zone?
Oh, for sure. That's kind of what they've done all playoffs. You're kind of watching the game and you're like, oh man, Vancouver's getting absolutely worked. And then bang, they create a turnover because they're staying within their structure and not panicking. And they get an opportunity. And like I said, and like they've been all year, their shooting percentage, I think we've all expected it to go down, and for them to stop scoring when it looked like at times they weren't in games, and they've just managed to stay resilient. So hats off to them. I do think, you know, the mistakes and the lapses by Edmonton definitely needs to be cleaned up, because again, if I'm on the Edmonton team and I'm on the Edmonton D-Corps and you're watching how Vancouver's playing, you just got to kind of mind your P's and Q's, and they just wait for you to make a mistake. And they're very good. They have some offensive weapons that once there is a mistake, they have the confidence, even though they haven't been getting a ton of offensive zone looks, to bury the puck. So, and I think, you know, Brock Besser's been absolutely incredible in these playoffs. You know, just having such a standout performance, and really know him through a few guys, that he's just a great human being, and you know, it's awesome to see. So, but yeah, for Edmonton, it's especially on the D side now that, listen, they replaced Skinner with Picard, and Skinner needs to make saves, just because, listen, they put the confidence in him at the trade deadline. They didn't go out and get anybody else. Mm-hmm. They said he's our guy, and they gave him as long a leash as possible. And you know, when you have this kind of talent, they're looking for something in net, like I said, just somebody serviceable, and you hope Duke can figure it out, and you know, maybe this is a game where Calvin comes in, wins the game, and then you give the net right back to Stu. But I don't know what it's going to mean going forward for him and within this organization. But, you know, obviously defensively, if I'm watching the D-men, they haven't given up a ton to the Vancouver Canucks. But when they do, it's not necessarily a great-looking scoring chance. It's something that they could clean up, just being more aggressive on the Vancouver Canucks forwards and not allowing them so much space to get open. So, and to your point, those are the killers in the playoffs. Yeah. especially when you have a team that you kind of have, you're beaten up on, and then they just pot a goal because you fall asleep for a second, that demoralizes you, because it's now in the back of your head that, okay, if we give them five chances, they're going to score two, so we have to make sure we give zero. And it kind of makes you tighten your stick a little bit and play a little bit more defensive, and that for Edmonton is not really their game.
We're in conversation with Jason Demers here, former NHL player, now NHL Network analyst. And, you know, one of the big talking points in this series has been the refereeing. And I think it's partly because these are two very engaged fan bases, and they're going to have the refs under the microscope looking for anything that they disagree with. What have you thought about just the standard in general? It's been a very physical series. Do you think the refs are doing a good job? Do you like how it's been officiated so far?
Listen, there's, you know, at the end of the day, they're human beings, and yeah, and they're trying. Hockey's an extremely fast game and probably one of the harder sports to ref, especially with them trying to make calls and stay out of the way all at the same time. So I have just such an immense respect for them. Listen, they make mistakes sometimes. They know it. They own up to it. I think they've tried to keep a level of consistency. Now, I know we could argue the missed call on McDavid with Quinn Hughes, and obviously the massage by Hyman to Nils Höglander is obviously huge talking points. And, you know, obviously people are going to be up in arms with the suspension that Zach Hyman wasn't given anything for his cross check. But at the end of the day, I think they took the worst of the, you know, the one in game with Connor. I think it's a missed call, but unfortunately they can't go back and review that one because they hadn't made the initial 2-minute call. So you feel bad that they missed that. I don't think it was on purpose. I just think it happened so quick, and it looked like Nugent Hopkins was passing the puck and it might have hit him. And again, I give the refs the benefit of the doubt there. And obviously on the suspension, I think they went with the most egregious of the penalties. Now, I don't think Carson Soucy meant to do that. I think it was just horrible timing. And he doesn't – I don't see him as an extremely dirty player, yeah, but, you know, that's why he got one game, and it could have been really bad. So I'm lucky nobody's hurt. And I just think it's you could argue it either way with refs anytime. You really get into the weeds because then it takes away from the game. And I just, anytime I played, it was as long as the refs don't make the game about and don't affect the game, I'm okay. If they miss some calls and the game still kind of plays out the way it should, I mean, you got to give them the benefit of the doubt because it is such a hard sport to ref, and especially going from season to playoffs. I know everybody wants the refs to keep the same standard, but people, like, if you're watching and you know the game at all, like, it takes on a whole different level of speed, pressure, physicality that you just don't see in the season. And it's hard for a ref to adjust on the fly, so I think it's a constant battle for them to how much do you call and how much do you let slide. And sometimes in doing that, they may miss some moments of the game. But I think as a whole, Vancouver's up 2-1. They've had the better goaltending, and they've been the better team through three games. So I think the refs haven't really influenced the series. So, you know, if the refs don't influence the series, I think it's all good in my book. So, and I know some people will be mad at that, but listen, you can't have your cake and eat it too. It just sometimes happens. We don't live in a perfect world, and the refs aren't perfect, and neither are the players or anybody around. So to expect that much from them is a little crass, to say the least. So I think you just, like I said, you don't want them to influence the game and implement themselves and make it about them, and I don't think they have it this time so far. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Totally fair, and I'm very curious to see what the kind of tone of the game is tonight between these two teams as the temperature Ooh. Continues to ramp up. I'm excited for it. Last thing
it's
I wanted to ask,
be...
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, last thing I wanted to ask you about is Elias Pettersson. And it's kind of remarkable that the Canucks are here in the second round, up a game on the Oilers, just given the lack of impact that Pettersson has had in the playoffs so far. And, you know, he scores a goal in game two, and maybe there's this thought that, all right, the monkey's off his back, it's going to come. But, you know, then I don't think any shots on goal in game three in Edmonton, kind of back to not really having any impact on the game. We've talked about it from like every angle here, right? Is it his confidence? Is there something, you know, physically bothering him? You know, Rick Tocchet said he's got to move his feet. Does he have the right line mates? It just seems like nothing's working for him right now. What stands out to you when you watch Elias Pettersson?
I mean, you could argue his line mates at times and you know, he needs to be with a certain kind of player, but I just think his body language just hasn't been where it was in the season, and chalk that up to just losing confidence in himself. But at the end of the day, you know, it's hockey's ebbs and flows, and every player goes through it. Now, do you wish he would have gone through it at a different time in the season and not now? Yeah, 100%. Because with him clicking on all cylinders, they're a different team. So, but I think teams have clued in on him a little bit. And he hasn't produced, but he's tried his best to play a good defensive game and play hard minutes. And you know, fortunately, they've gotten a lot of scoring from other lines. And obviously, the Connor Garland has been absolutely incredible. And so has Dakota Joshua. And then you go to JT Miller on the top line. They've been really good. So, you know, they haven't had to lean on him, thankfully, to produce offense. But listen, he had a goal in game two. He's, you know, I look for him. If they have any chance of winning the cup, they need him to get going. You know, it's as simple as that. But, you know, what happens to players? He just needs to, I know how Rick Tocchet is. I had him as a coach, and I'm sure he's trying to preach to him, just simplify his game and keep doing the details. And that's the only thing you can really focus on when you're in a slump and struggling, is just focus on the details and just trust that, you know, you've done it, you're capable of doing it, you've been here before, and it's just a matter of time before you get yourself out of it.
Jason, great stuff. Really appreciate the insight into this series, into, you know, your former teammate getting the start in goal tonight as well. Thanks for doing this, and hopefully we get another good one between these two teams tonight.
Yeah, hopefully. It's been great. The Twitter action has been incredible, so that's the most fun about it.
The fan and media battle has been sensational in addition to the games.
Oh, the Twitter, I'll be honest with you, the Twitter battle has been more exciting than the hockey. Like, the fans are, it's incredible. I love it. It's unbelievable. And you got to be careful what you say about either team because you'll get skewered. So, and it's hilarious. But, hey, that's what makes this game beautiful.
Hey, we all got to be on our game at this time of year, no doubt about it. Thanks for doing this, man.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, that is Jason Demers, former NHL player, now NHL Network analysis, weighing in with what he's seen from this series so far, and yes, also what he's seen in the social media battle that's ensuing, the sideshow to the main event, that is the actual games on the ice. But, you know, Jason Demers, as I started off the show saying, like, this is a pretty startling lack of trust that you're seeing from Chris Knobloch and his depth players, and Demers echoing that a little bit, right? Talking about how difficult it is when your minutes are getting reduced, when all of the minutes are going to the top guys. Well, you got to play a shift eventually. And that's a really tough spot to be in when you feel like you're not really a key player. You know, the coach doesn't necessarily have that trust in you. Your role is reduced. That's a really tough spot to put the team in. And, you know, as he said, there's just, it feels like loading up the minutes for McDavid and Draisaitl is just such a kind of safety blanket for any Oilers coach. Chris Knobloch, previous Oilers coach, it's just it's the obvious option there, and you understand why they go to it. It can be so successful. You see how they tilt the ice. But is it worth it? Ultimately, is the risk-reward calculation worth it when they decide to go to that option, especially when they go to it so quickly? At least it feels a little premature in this series to me, given how the game flow of these games has gone, you know, given the fact that they've been close games, they've been in it, they could easily be up in this series. It feels early. Now, as mentioned, they're going to start with McDavid and Draisaitl on different lines tonight. But even Chris Knobloch in saying that said, yeah, but we'll probably mix it up. We'll get them out there together at different points. We're going to look for opportunities to double shift them if they go 11-7. One of the other interesting things here is that they switched their defense pairings up a little bit. We talked a lot about the Nurse-Cece pairing and how vulnerable it's looked and how poorly it's played against the Canucks in this series. So there was no Matthias Ekholm on the ice. We'll talk more about this in the whiteboard of Drance as well. There was no Matthias Ekholm on the ice for the Oilers. So their defense pairings were Brett Kulak and Evan Bouchard, Darnell Nurse and Vincent Desharnais, and then Philip Broberg and Cody Ceci. So Broberg might draw in. Ekholm will play. He just wasn't at morning skate. You could have seven defensemen. Do they have Nurse and Ceci still together? Do they split up Ekholm and Bouchard? How do they juggle that? Again, more kind of searching for options, more reactive decisions from the Edmonton coaching staff. And I think ultimately speaking to a bit of a lack of trust in a lot of their depth options that they have available right now. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drancer will join next here on the show. We'll do the whiteboard. We'll get you all set for game 4 between the Canucks and the Oilers. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.